Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Election in overtime. Still no winner, but we can tell you unions have kept Biden in the running. And today on the show, the IBEW member in Congress, Senator Sherrod Brown, and what you need to know about probate and estate planning. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, November 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. Also check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcasts. We have three guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with one of the fine attorneys of Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com, the website. Joining us will be Dana DePiro. She was on before, and we had a really good conversation on probate and estate planning. What is probate and estate planning? You think about the 70 million plus baby boomers. There's a big transfer of wealth going on in America today, and it's so important. If you have not planned your estate, you better hurry up. You better hurry up. It's important because today you want to make sure that this doesn't end up in court. She'll talk about that. Next of kin, heirs, adopted, stepkids, extended families. There's a lot on the table that needs to be clarified. And Dana is going to do that. Kelly and Ferraro, practicing nationwide. That number is 800-398-1795. 800-398-1795. Kelly-Ferraro.com. There's two L's in Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, and two R's in Ferraro. Don Norcross will be joining us as our second guest. And this is an individual that I'm really, really excited to have on the show. He is the only electrician in Congress, and he worked for years installing and restoring power for New Jersey homes, businesses, and industrial sites. He rose through the ranks, eventually became a business agent for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We're talking Local 351. He was also president of the South New Jersey AFL-CIO, where he advocated on behalf of thousands of hardworking men and women. Did that for about 20 years. Also a graduate of both Camden County College and a skilled apprenticeship program. He's going to talk about apprenticeship programs, the importance of which, and having the union difference on the show. I always say it's so important to get working class individuals in the halls of Congress. And it doesn't get any better than Don Norcross. Let me give you an example. Hundreds of IBEW members could be working as early as next spring on construction of the New Jersey wind port. All right. According to the governor in New Jersey, which is Phil Murphy, he says this is going to be a 200-acre, $400 million production and assembly facility where it will serve as a major first step toward making his state a nerve center for the offshore wind project slated for construction along the Atlantic coast. Again, we're talking like 10 years of work at least. That's the union difference. So Don Norcross will be our second guest, and then we're going to button things up with Senator Sherrod Brown, one of our regulars here. I'm sure he'll have his comments on the election. A couple things he wants to zero in on is the opposition to the administration's attempt to further misclassify workers. Senator Brown led a group of his Senate colleagues urging the U.S. Department of Labor and the Secretary, Gene Scalia, to rescind a proposed rule regarding classification of workers as employees under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The rule proposes a misguided test to determine if a worker is an employee under the FLSA, which pretty much fails to address the rampant, and I mean rampant, misclassification of workers as independent contractors. Yeah, this is pretty pretty much loosened it up for a lot of people, and it's not good. It's not good. You're an independent contractor. Everything is on you. You pay your taxes. You got to get your benefits. Everything. Everything. Other issue is utility companies. The senator is urging the administration to cease utility shutoffs while we're in the middle of this pandemic. And lastly, he's blasting Mitch McConnell for abandoning small businesses. He took to the Senate floor on this. There's video online. And he blasted Trump and McConnell for ignoring the workers, families, and small businesses in Ohio and in other states around the country who are hurting and need relief. So he joined his colleagues in introducing the HEROES Small Business Lifeline Act, which would provide $370 billion of support to the hardest hit and most vulnerable small businesses. You know, why this has not happened already is beyond me. Because you would think this administration is all about business, right? So let's help the small businesses. They've neglected a lot of workers, but what about the businesses that hire them? Oh, I scratch my head sometimes. So Senator Sherrod Brown will be our last guest right here on the show. Well, we still don't have a winner in the race. As I said at the top of the show, the election's in overtime. Now, the decision on whether Joe Biden will defeat Trump seems to be relying on some strong union states. All right? The states that Biden needs to win to be elected include Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Nevada. Now, CNN and various other networks have declared Wisconsin and Michigan for Biden. And currently, he's leading in Nevada. And ballots are still being counted in Pennsylvania. So look at that. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. We're talking some serious union households there. And apparently, the union voters came out pretty strong for Biden. Nationally, exit polls, and this includes early voters and mail-in ballot voters, showed about 19% of voters, 19%, almost one out of five, were in a union household, with 57% of them voting for Biden. I figured it'd be a little higher than that, but I'll take it. If you go back to 2016 with Hillary Clinton, she only won 51% of those voters. So he saw a 6% increase. Additionally, this year, only 40% of those voters went for Trump. That's an 8-point drop from 4 years ago. Let's look at Michigan. In Michigan, 22% of voters were from union households. 56% going for Biden. Wisconsin, only 15% of voters were from union households. But 58% of them voted for Biden. And when you look at Nevada, the state that has turned blue, thanks to the work of the Culinary Workers Union, they had 19% of voters being in a union household. Biden won 56% of those voters. However, in Pennsylvania, 18% of voters live in a union household, though 50% of those voters went for Trump. And as I indicated, that's still in play. We may not know that for a couple of days. But a lot of union brothers and sisters definitely got the message this time around. You know, when it comes down to labor, no question, Biden is the guy. I got an interesting comment today from Frank Christensen. Frank is the general president of the International Union of Elevator Constructors, and he wrote an op-ed in The Hill entitled, "Biden is Labor's Best Bet." In the article, he focused on the job and income losses that resulted from Donald Trump's failure to properly prepare for and handle the pandemic. He then went on to explain that members of Trump's cabinet and administration have also been anti-labor, including their reduction of alternative worker health insurance, refusal to extend unemployment benefits, gutting occupational and safety regulations. Now, as these votes are still being cast and counted, labor unions throughout the nation have threatened to strike if there's any threats to the enactment of a free and fair election. We've been on this issue for the last couple of days. Senior advisor to Rich Trumka, the AFL-CIO, Michael Potholzer, reiterated the messages made by the union's president and executive council this month about the union's role in protecting democracy. And this is what he said. We're not looking for a fight. We just want the election results to be respected. We're getting ready if they're not respected because we believe this is a country where what voters say matters. In Chicago, 8 Chicago area unions released the following statement. Donald Trump wants to steal this election. We won't let him, and we're prepared to engage in mass nonviolent protests up to and including a general strike of all working people if necessary to protect and defend our democratic rights. Other unions in New York, Vermont, and Washington have also made commitments to prepare for or hold general strikes or meetings in light of a contested election. You know, with the court battles that that may happen here that are already in place, actually, this could go on for weeks, maybe into the new year. One to watch, no doubt. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce, our segment with Kelly and Ferraro coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast, at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show, Dana DePiro. She was here a couple months ago talking about probate and estate planning. Got a lot of calls and a lot of emails on that. We decided to continue the conversation with her. Very, very important that you have your ducks in a row, so to speak. And Dana's with Kelly and Ferraro, one of the proud sponsors of America's Workforce. Nationwide number 800-398-1795, kelly-ferraro.com. Hey, Dana, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Let's go right back to the beginning here and explain what probate and estate planning is all about and the importance of having this all together here, especially as you age. Go ahead.
Sure. Probate is essentially what happens when you pass away. What are you going to do with your stuff and who are you going to give it to? So with estate planning, you are able to determine, you know, before you pass away, who you want to get your, you know, your property, your bank accounts, your furniture, and things like that. And you can do it by, you know, doing what we talked about before, which were transfers on death or payable on death, which means you own the property or you own the bank account up until you're passing. And then once you pass away, it automatically will transfer on death to who you want to receive that. You can also do a will, and that would mean you will die testate. and then your will speaks for you. One of the worst things you can do is die without a will or with any type of estate planning, because then that's when you have the court and the laws of Ohio getting involved to say who should get your stuff, for lack of a better explanation. So it's always good to have some estate planning up front. It's an uncomfortable topic, but it's really important if you want to make sure the right person or persons get your possessions.
So the best advice here, get this done right away. Don't wait. You never know what's going to happen in your life. It could change in a heartbeat. So get this done. And what's the best way to start? I hear a lot of people that like to go online, to research, get some information there. Is that a good way to start, or should they just call you at Kelly and Ferraro?
It is. You know, it's always good to get some knowledge and education behind you. I do recommend, no matter what you have, I know some people don't think that they're, you know, living in Beverly Hills, they don't have to worry about estate planning, but you know, you do want to get your ducks in a row, and if you don't want to hire an attorney, then the best advice I can offer you is go to your bank and find out, you know, your checking, your savings account, what's going to happen to those when you pass away. And you speak with the branch manager or someone in the bank, and they're going to tell you if you have, what's a TOD, which is transfer on death, or a POD, which is payable on death. Start there. Start small. And then again, build from there. You know, make sure the title of your house is it joint with rights of survivorship. If it is, then that means when you pass, the person that you own it with then gets 100% of it. So start small. But again, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and contact an attorney, because there are other avenues that they can take you down. And again, you know, there are other avenues that you might not be thinking of, such as, you know, tax shelter and staying away from any type of tax ramifications, or, you know, gift inheritance, things like that. So again, if you want to start small, do that, but you want to eventually get your way to an attorney who can make sure that, you know, you're covered completely.
You mentioned if you don't do anything, it goes to a court of law. And I'm sure there's a lot of cases like that. And what does it sit there for a while? How does that work itself out when that happens?
Sure. There's a lot of different routes it can take. One of the first things that will need to be decided is who's going to be the executor or the fiduciary of the estate. If you've left property and assets and whatnot that aren't transferable on death, then you're going to need to open an estate or maybe do a release from administration. So you figure out who that fiduciary is going to be. That's that estate representative that we previously spoke about. And then the court's going to get involved, because they're going to make you tell them, you know, who's your next of kin? Who is the spouse? Who are the children? You know, what property, what assets do you have or whatnot? And then there are laws that are going to basically come in and dictate who gets what. And there's, you know, something like a family allowance that the spouse needs to take up to so much before anybody else shares. If the spouse is the natural or adoptive parent of all the children, they get so much. If there's minors involved, if there's disabled children involved. So again, there's a lot of factors. And while the court tries to be as fair as possible, perhaps the laws in Ohio don't match what you want to have happen to your possessions in your estate. So that's why it's important that you do this prior to your passing, because then your voice speaks after you're gone.
Dana, I was mentioning the baby boom generation. There's 70 million plus of us. I'm part of that group. And we're in that stage right now in America where you're dealing with that transfer of wealth. I'm just wondering, are you pretty occupied with that being the case right now at Kelly and Ferraro? I would imagine a lot of this is going on right now. People are really concerned about what's going to happen with their estate.
Yeah, it's a big question right now, especially with the pandemic that's going on as well. Unfortunately, people are getting nervous and they're getting scared. And so they're starting to have these conversations. And again, I know it's uncomfortable, but it is important to have them as early as possible. That way, you're protected and your loved ones are protected as well.
What about wrongful death? I know Kelly and Ferraro does a lot with asbestos, personal injury cases and things of that nature. And I'm wondering how that plays into to this discussion on estate planning.
Sure. With wrongful death, that's a lot of the work that the probate department does at Kelly and Ferraro. And whether it's asbestos, it's Zantac, any other type of pharmaceutical lawsuit that we're pursuing, you get proceeds in, and then you have to make a distribution. So this is where it gets a little tricky, because even if you do have estate planning, if you are pursuing a wrongful death claim, you still have to open an estate in full administration. And that's because you are not alive anymore to pursue that action. So something needs to stand in your place, and that something is an estate. And the personal representative does the walking and talking for the estate. And that personal representative is either, you know, the fiduciary who's named in the will, or someone else if there isn't a will. Then that wrongful death then that estate pursues a wrongful death on behalf of the surviving spouse, the children, parents of the decedent. And then again, the court becomes involved with that. And there's an Ohio revised code that says basically who's going to get those proceeds. And again, you have a class that's presumed to have suffered. That's the surviving spouse, the children, and the parents of the decedent. They have an automatic presumption that they have suffered damages as a result of mm-hmm. the decedent's passing.
Are the laws pretty clear on what you're talking about right now? Because, as you know, with any kind of court case, it could get very, very complicated. I'm just wondering about the clarity of the laws on this, especially in the state of Ohio where you're practicing.
They are clear. They're not necessarily what other people or, you know, the average layperson agrees with. For example, in Ohio, to be considered a next of kin, you are either the spouse, you have to be legally married, you have to be the natural child, or you have to be legally adopted. So if you have stepchildren, even though your stepfather raised you, if he did not legally adopt you, then you don't fall into that class that's presumed to have suffered. So I guess the easiest explanation is if you think of the Brady Bunch, you know, you have Carol and Mike. If Carol passes away, Peter, even though he was her stepson and she raised him, he cannot recover from Carol's wrongful death because he is a stepchild and she never legally adopted him. So, again, that's where the estate planning comes in, because if you raised your stepchild and you love them and you want them to have something, then you would state that in your will, that they get one half or a quarter or 100%. You would put that in there. If it's not in there and you're silent on that subject, then again, the law in Ohio is a stepchild doesn't fall into that class. Same thing with, you know, we have a lot of blended families now in the world. And if you are a half-blood, meaning that you, let's say, Marsha and Jan share Carol, but they have a different father, even though they are half-siblings, they are considered whole bloods for Carol, and they both would take under Carol's estate. So, you know, I know a lot of people, when someone passes away, they say, well, my dad had another daughter, but she and I aren't siblings, so she doesn't need to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. Yes, she does, because she is your dad's child. And again, the court doesn't look at half and whole bloods. It's, if that is your father, then you come in and you are in that class that's presumed to have suffered. And then if for some reason there are families that perhaps argue or disagree with who is or is not a next of kin, then you have to go with a determination of heirship, which is a whole other legal proceeding, and that can get time consuming. You know, you request birth certificates, there's, you know, you look at the obituary, you could possibly do DNA testing. So it can be long, drawn out, and even a little bit expensive. But you want to try to stay away from that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Dana, how long have you been doing this estate planning in probate?
I've been with Kelly and Ferraro since 2004. So I've been there quite a while.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got a lot of very, very interesting stories to share. And, you know, your depiction of the Brady Bunch is a good example, because that's America today when you think about it. Maybe not to the extent of the Brady Bunch, but nonetheless, that is America today. So the takeaway, make sure you get it all down in writing, okay? It's so important that you have, like I said, your ducks in a row. Dana DePiro, partner, I should say, at Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com is the website. Nationwide number is 1-800-398-1795. Let me repeat that. It's 800-398-1795. You know, let's have you come back in a couple months down the road, maybe in the new year. And maybe there might be some specific cases, past cases, like you pointed out, and we could get in depth on some of those and how complicated they get, because I know they get complicated, and that's why we have Kelly and Ferraro there. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Thank you. I'd love to.
Okay. Take care and be safe. Once again, Dana DePiro, one of the fine attorneys and a partner at Kelly and Ferraro. Kelly-Ferraro.com, the website. Quick break. Don Norcross, the only union electrician in Congress, and he's next on the show. You're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. ulagency.org is our website. Let's go to a line number two. Been chasing this guy down for a long time and following his career in Congress. I always say you want to make a difference in Congress, get union brothers and sisters elected. And he's been elected and reelected several times. His name is Don Norcross. Grew up in South Jersey. And he is a member of the IBEW. Union strong, Congress strong. I like that. Mr. Norcross, welcome to America's Workforce. And I can only assume that you overwhelmingly were reelected in Jersey. Is that correct?
We did very well. Somewhere 65%, approaching 70% when the votes are counted. But, wow. From the work site to Congress, it doesn't happen every day. Just proud to represent the constituents of the 1st District and my brothers and sisters who I worked with for years and years.
Well, how do you feel about the White House race right now?
Wow. I'd rather be in Joe Biden's shoes than President Trump any day of the week. Looks like he has a pathway, but Speaker Pelosi says, be calm, be confident, and be patient. I get two of the three, but I'm from Jersey. We're not real patient. We need this time.
I love it. Well, Mr. Norcross, for the benefit of our listeners, is the only electrician in Congress, member of Local 351. And I came across a story on behalf of the IBEW Media Center about the energy future. It was titled, "The Energy Future Will Be Union Built." And that just is a good example of how people like yourself can make a difference. And I know you have a number of union reps in the state legislature, but we're talking about a huge project, a $400 million production and assembly facility that is going to include a number of windmills along the Atlantic coast, and it's going to provide jobs for the future. That's just one of many examples out there. And I want to talk about how you're able to accomplish something like this. And the very fact of your union background, doesn't that make a big difference? And I'm sure other members of Congress have to take notice on this, right?
Well, like you said earlier, there's 214 lawyers, but only one electrician. We got one painter and one iron worker. That's it. Obviously, others are very sympathetic, but it's different when you've been out in the field working, as I was for years and years, and staying close. And then I was blessed enough to move into the office as a business agent for years. And literally a childhood friend of mine who's an iron worker, we're having a discussion on how can we get better connections in government. And that's what started what we call public officials with a union label, just regular men and women who are out working every day contributing to their town. So my colleague Steve Sweeney is Senate president and is an international vice president of the iron workers. And I was one of the latecomers. I had recruited 100 rank-and-file members to run an office in our area. And then one day they turned around and said, "How about you?" And in a weak moment, I said yes. So I ran for state legislator. I was able to serve in the Senate where we actually came up with the bill that set the table for the wind wrecks and the windmills that you're talking about. We also have per capita, the second amount, the largest amount of solar panels in the country. And that came from an iron worker and from an electrician.
I love it. I know you're a big sponsor of the PRO Act, Protect the Right to Organize, which would change labor law, much needed in this country. I'm just wondering here with moving forward, you don't know what the Senate is going to be. Right now, it looks like it still may remain in Republican hands, but what's your thoughts of the PRO Act moving forward? Do you think it's a possibility in the next administration, especially with Biden in charge?
Well, certainly the White House. I'm from southern New Jersey, across the river from where I live, is Delaware. We used to call Joe Biden our third senator because of the great relations that we had with him over the years. You know, people like to say they understand the working men and women. Obviously, uh-huh. The president doesn't know the first thing about it. But Joe really understood it. He really did. And this is why I'm so excited about Joe moving in the White House. A, he's going to bring a new sense of we're all in this together. And secondly, he understands that climate is a big deal. But you can't leave people behind as you move forward. We're all in it. So the PRO Act is just one of those issues. We'll get it out of our house. Certainly, if it makes it to President Biden's desk, I believe he'll sign it. He certainly has said that. But you got the Senate. So it's going to force us to have conversations, and hopefully we can move it on. But you know, there's so many things at the top of the list. Minimum wage. It's unbelievable. The longest period in U.S. history that we haven't raised minimum wage. And that's got to be right there at the top of the list. The idea that the billionaires can get tax breaks, and you can't raise the minimum wage from $7.50 an hour. It's a national disgrace. That certainly is back on it. And, you know, bringing things home to America to build. I've been blessed with serving on the Armed Services Committee, where this year we put an amendment into our big, it's called the NDAA. It's the one bill that we put out for authorizing. It says, Buy America. Right now, mm-hmm. A major defense system only has to be a 50% to be called Buy American. we want to move that up to 100% at some point. And the Republicans are fighting it. Donald Trump is fighting it. So we have a chance to reset the table here. And Bobby Scott, who's chair of labor and education, certainly understands it. And we're going to work together.
Mr. Norcross, I know under this administration, we've seen some lackluster enforcement of safety standards. I'm primarily zeroing in on OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And I even noticed the press releases don't come out anymore where certain companies are cited. Unless they're fined, that's when the release comes out. So it seems like they're trying to hide a lot of information coming out. What's your take? I'm sure as a member of Congress, you have to be privy to what's going on here. Can you share anything with us at this juncture?
Oh, absolutely. So, as you know, I serve on the Labor Education Committee, and we have people come in and testify how we need to lessen the regulation, how it's choking them. In my career out in the field, I was on a job twice where we lost someone. You never forget that. The idea of being safe and going to work and coming home in the same condition is something we have to have. What they have not done in a pandemic is, to me, nothing short of criminal. And I say that in very strong terms. No standards. We have guidelines. Yeah, you can follow these if you want. We have to have a set of standards that we all follow the same science and it being enforceable. We have union brothers and sisters working in senior care here in Jersey, where the highest infection rates, we lost the most people during COVID, and no standards. They've been sitting on the desk of Secretary of Labor for literally years, and he's not moving on it. So Jersey, thanks to our governor and Senate president, they put in a temporary standard here in Jersey, but that means 49 other states need it. It's unbelievable how tough it is. You got to get somebody in the Department of Labor who's been out in the field, who understands what working men and women go through. You know, I might even throw my hat in the ring if Joe Biden gets there. Somebody who's been out there working it and understands it at a different level.
That's right. That's the union difference. We always talk about that on the show. It's so important. You got to get that perspective in there, and we got to rebuild America. Got to move forward. I want to talk about apprenticeship programs, and I know this administration try to water them down. You heard about the IRAPs and all that. Where do we stand on that right now?
I was in the middle of that fight because I proudly said I went to the other four-year school. I went to an apprenticeship. I have three brothers. They all went to college, and that was right for them. For me, I love to work with my hands. And I went into the IBEW and became a journeyman wireman. Standards are so important. That's the real difference we're talking about. Susan Davis, who is retiring after this term, we passed a bill out of our committee and out of the House updating the National Apprenticeship Act. By the way, next week's the National Apprenticeship Week. On how important
right.
that is, you know, standards. And let me just give you one example why it is so important to have standards. Something when a storm hits down Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, the power goes out. Literally, working men and women from around the country go down to what we call storm break. I used to do it on occasion when I was with the tools. And that means linemen, electricians from literally around the country go there. Could you imagine if that one's trained to a different set of standards than the guy on the East Coast and they're trying to work together? You know, it used to be one of the most dangerous times. So working towards standards, particularly in the construction industry, where you're mobile, that you go around, is so important. What they're trying to do is just water it down and dumb it down, as we call it, so that they can lower the wages. The ABC is behind this, and I think that it is a disgrace for what they're trying to do. Something that has worked for close to 100 years, they're screwing with. Now, there could be some individual ones they can work on, but that's not going to pass in our House.
Yeah, the ABCs, the right to workers, that's got to be a very powerful lobby in Congress. I'm sure many times when you've testified before Congress. They did what they can to, I'm sure, grease the palms of lawmakers so they get their way. Can you speak to any of that?
For some reason, they haven't come and talked to me. I'm not quite sure why. Why do you say?
No, they don't want to hear the truth. We had a fellow come in and testify about tree trimming and how that we, as part of the federal government, OSHA, should not regulate them, that they should take care of themselves. Well, uh-huh. I used to represent them as part of the IBEW, and I said, one of the most dangerous jobs out there, and you're going to sit here and tell me the way that you think it should be done? We can show you those gravestones of people who've been killed on the job because they're not following the standards. I said, we do it better than anybody, and making sure that you come home the way you want to work is so important.
I remember when the Republicans were in charge some years back in the House, they didn't even want to say the word union. I mean, they took union off one of the committees. I mean, it's just shameful. It really is shameful. And here yeah. you talk about people like yourself that built America. I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
That's a great point that you made, especially coming through the election. The idea that if you go to college that somehow you're better than those who work with their hands and their head, it's just ludicrous. I mean, and that's where some of the people think that they're being treated, that if you don't go to college, you're left in. Hey, when I grew up, I didn't know if I wanted to go to college, build the college, or defend the college. We need everybody, and they're all equal. Whether you work with your hand or you're a PhD from Harvard, we are all equal.
Boy, you are a perfect fit for this show. You know that?
Thank you, but it's what I grew up in. It's what yeah. my parents taught us. You know, I got great brothers. Some made it through college, some didn't. But parents loved us all for what we did. And I'm a proud electrician that happened to be in Congress.
Well, Representative Norcross, I have to wrap up the show right here. I got Sherrod Brown coming up next. How's that sound? He's a fighter,
hey,
right?
We worked together on the multi-employer pension, which we still have to fix. You should be able to retire with dignity, and our pensions are in trouble. We got to fix them, and Sherrod's been a great advocate.
Amen, brother. Representative, you take care, be safe, and please keep in touch with America's workforce. Let's do this again, okay?
Absolutely. To my brothers and sisters out there, be safe, keep your distance, and wear a mask. God bless you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Senator Sherrod Brown right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number three. Just hung up the phone with Don Norcross, the only union electrician in the halls of Congress. And we got a union fighter on line number three by the name of Sherrod Brown, Senator Sherrod Brown. Hey, Senator, welcome back to America's Workforce. Are you getting any sleep yet?
Yeah, I'm all right. No complaints. So, but it's a long night for everybody. The vote just takes a while. There's so many people, and so many people voted, and you know, so many of these votes were cast absentee, and absentee always takes longer to count because you got to take it out of the envelope, the outer envelope, then you check the signature, and you do a lot more checks than you do if it's in-person voting. In some state laws, are so boneheaded. Because of conservative opposition, really, that you can't start doing that until the polls are closed. So in Ohio, they open them. They start doing that earlier when they're received, and then they're ready to count at the time of the poll closing. So there's no question of fraud, and then they start counting. So Ohio gets its done much earlier. So it's a good state law in Ohio.
I'm pretty pleased with the voting. I'm not pleased with the result, but nonetheless, we have to move on from there. Don't you think it's kind of interesting that Trump wants to stop the count in the states where he's ahead, but go back to the areas where he's losing and maybe do a recount? Don't you think that's kind of interesting?
Well, it's not surprising because the president's known, I think, for several weeks that he was very possibly going to lose, maybe even likely going to lose, and he started already. So he questioned the legitimacy of the election. He said it was rigged ahead of time. He said absentee balloting and mail voting are fraud, rife with fraud. And I did, you may have heard this, I did an ad, did a PSA with Bob Taft. Bob Taft is a guy that I was Secretary of State. He defeated me, became Secretary of State. We're friends now. I go and speak to his government class in Dayton, but he and I did an ad together because, you know, we both understand that mail-in voting has worked in Ohio for decades without any real accusations of fraud until Donald Trump says it. So it's just a bogus. But I think Trump just had a lot of feelings in his head that he was going to lose, and so he wanted to put out there that this is a fraudulent election. It's not at all. The election's not called until every vote's counted. Period. That's logical, right? It's how we've done it for years.
Well, you said a key word there called logic, and I think that's lacking in this administration. Right. But I'm not going to get into that. I want to get into a couple of things. Here's one, for instance. I can't figure this out because conservatives are all about business. I do understand that. You got to prop up businesses, give them tax breaks. And apparently Mitch McConnell has some legislation. It's called the Small Business Lifeline Act, which is a bunch of measures that would provide $370 billion of support to the hardest hit, most vulnerable small businesses. And I don't understand why there's an issue with this. Can you explain that to me?
Well, McConnell wants to take care of business and nobody else. I mean, he's refused. He's dug in when he and Trump stopped the unemployment benefit, the $600 a week that workers got for several months, and stopped it in August when he won't put money into schools so that more economically challenged school districts can't open safely. They don't have the money to reconfigure classrooms and cafeterias to keep kids socially distanced and safe. He didn't want to put any money in local governments, so police and fire layoffs result and fewer in layoffs in children's services and parks department and all. So McConnell just wanted to help business and nobody else. It's sort of like during the crisis 10 years ago, the Bush economic implosion. McConnell and his ilk just wanted to help Wall Street, not the auto industry. So that's one reason Joe Biden won this election, because he stood with me and others saying, no, we're going to make sure we help the auto industry. So with McConnell, it's always his corporate contributors. It's never workers. It's never consumers.
Mm-hmm. So even the small businesses are left out of the picture then. I mean, it's the big ones, the ones that support us.
We want to do that, but we want to do other things too. And if McConnell helps only the small businesses, there's no, but now that this election's over, I'm hopeful that McConnell now sits down with Pelosi and the Biden administration, or even the Trump administration, the next couple of weeks, and we write a package that really helps everybody, so that they can deal better with this terrible economy. Because it's, you know, what are workers supposed to do if they lost their unemployment? They can't find jobs. They're facing eviction in too many cases. They're facing water and electricity shutoffs by their electric company in the middle of as the winter approaches, in the middle of a pandemic. What are they supposed to do?
Right. Yeah, I know there's an urging to stop that, to cease any shutoffs during the pandemic. I know you're behind that. Misclassification of workers. This is a big issue, as you know. It's been going on for years, and apparently this administration has kind of watered it down, made it more confusing. Where are we at this juncture?
Well, we're trying to get the a group of us sent a letter to Secretary Scalia to get him to pay attention to this. And frankly, they don't. They're just siding with business interests here and don't much care. And you've seen so many companies now. They'll even brag about how they're paying their workers well, but then they'll contract out security services to provide. They'll contract out custodial work. They'll contract out food preparers, food service, and these workers then get low wages and no benefits. And I've talked to the Biden people about this. They're going to pay real attention to this next year in the new Biden administration, because there's just too many cases of people just get left out. So the group of us sent this letter to Scalia about what they've done. They've made it worse. They've not only not fixed it, they've made it worse. And their rule would exclude millions of workers from the protections. I mean, one of the things that made Democrats the ascendant party from Roosevelt on among workers was that we looked out, made sure that workers had the benefits of minimum wage and overtime and benefits, and Republicans always fought it. Well, this is the new way to fight it, is to encourage misclassification so workers get left out.
Boy, you hit a key topic there, the minimum wage. As I indicated to you, we just got off the phone with Don Norcross, who you know very well and worked on pensions with. And he is appalled, much like yourself, that what is it, 11, 12 years now that we have yet to address raising the minimum wage? That's shameful. That is absolutely shameful, Senator.
It is shameful. We raised it right at the beginning of Obama, the end of Bush, and there, we were trying to raise it in the kind of halfway through the Obama administration, and Republicans blocked it. And Obama kind of gave up. I mean, he wasn't going to be able to change McConnell's mind. And then we've been pushing Trump. Pelosi's done it in the House, and she wants to do it. And it ought to be raised to 15. And people think 15 is a big jump from 7. It is, but it hasn't. It was already behind what it used to be in real dollars and hadn't been raised in years. And we've got to do it. We've also got, with that, is something we've talked about a number of times, Flash, called the overtime rule. And in a nutshell, if you're making $32,000 a year and you're supervising a night shift at a fast food restaurant, if they call you management supervisor, they call you put you at supervisory status, they can work you 50 and 60 hours with no overtime pay, not a dollar.
Right.
So we changed the rule that if you make up to $50,000 roughly a year, and they call you supervisory, you still get overtime if you work more than 40 hours. That would have been 130,000 Ohioans would have gotten overtime pay in their pockets. And early in the Trump administration, they just took it away. And so we're going to one of my conversations with Biden, and what I've talked to about his staff is we've got to fix that rule first thing out of the box so that people get those raises they've earned.
A lot of work to do, no doubt. Senator, I know we're out of time. You take care. Let's be optimistic. And next time we talk, maybe we'll have a new president in place, okay?
Yeah, I think we will. I think there's no doubt Biden's going to be the new president. That's right. So
very
sounds
good.
We'll probably talk in early January before the new president, but nonetheless, we know he'll be coming.
There you go. Okay, well, keep the faith and stay safe, all right? Senator Sherrod Brown on our live line. Well, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Ohio State Building Trades and the New York AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.